Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On May 9th, 1934, 150,000 workers in the Bay Area went on strike. West Coast longshoremen shut down docks along 2,000 miles of coastline, including major ports in Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, and San Diego. The longshoremen wanted $1 an hour, a six-hour workday, and a 30-hour work week. They also wanted union representation that would end all forms of discrimination. The strike lasted for 83 days. It was a pivotal moment in the rise of organized labor in the U.S. The San Francisco Labor Fest was established to commemorate that strike and to remember two workers who were killed on July 5th, 1934, which is known as Bloody Thursday. Over the last 28 years, the San Francisco Labor Fest has been hosting 30 days of events to educate people about the history of the U.S. labor movement. San Francisco's Labor Fest is happening now through the end of the month. Most events are free and many are online, so you can take part no matter where you are. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org or laborfest.net. Joining us now is Steve Zeltzer, a longtime labor and community activist who is on the SF Labor Fest organizing committee. Later in the show, we will hear from a few workers who are taking part in the various panels. Hi, Steve. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Well, it's great to have you, Steve. I have to say, I am so impressed every year with this festival. How do you all manage to put together so many incredible events? There's usually two or three every day.
Well, basically, as a result of the fact that we've been doing this for a long time, we know a lot of labor educators and labor activists, and we're able to, they focus on July, which is the anniversary of the general strike, so we can kind of bring that together. These go on usually separately, but by focusing on July when the strike happened, the general strike, people know that it's going to happen and they want to have things during the month.
Well, and just to let people know just what's coming up, for example, tomorrow there's a panel on Black workers and systemic racism. Black workers have faced continual racist attacks on the job in San Francisco and throughout the country. There's a film, American Factory. It was filmed in a Chinese-run former General Motors assembly plant in Moraine, Ohio. July 16th, billionaires and the sell-off of San Francisco from CCSF to the parks and city services. I mean, there's just so many great talks. And I love these WPA walks. There's one in Berkeley with Harvey Smith on Saturday, July 17th.
It's very rich. I mean, the history, working class history of San Francisco is in the Bay Area is tremendous. And the art, the music, the culture. So that's what we try to bring forward. And most people are unaware of this history and culture. And in fact, labor history, most people are unaware of that. So we wanted to institutionalize this festival to show that we have a rich, deep history, and it's important that people know about it. And that's part of the tasks of Labor Fest, or the goals that we have. And that is, we want people educated about the history.
And that is so important. And that is why SF Labor Fest was established, to commemorate that 1934 general strike and to remind people of just how pivotal that was in the rise of labor in the U.S.
Well, that's why the Bay Area is more organized than most places in the United States. After the general strike, hundreds of thousands of workers joined unions in Northern California. And that transformed the Bay Area to a highly unionized place. And the unions still exist here, most of them, except the ones that were witch hunted out of existence. But it's still a unionized area compared to other parts of the country, actually.
What else do you want people to know about the history specifically of the 1934 general strike?
Well, one of the important things about the ILWU is it's a democratic union, and actually was formed in a struggle against the ILA, which was a conservative, really company-run union on the East Coast. And they decided that they wanted an independent union that would be democratically run. So the ILWU has elections in San Francisco Local 10, for example. The officers can only hold office for two terms, and then they have to go back to work as a rank and filer. And that means that other members of the union have a chance to get educated about their union, and they have direct control. They have power. The other thing is that we did a program on the Marine Cooks and Stewards Alan Berube, about that union, which actually fought segregation on the ships by stopping ships from shipping out unless they were integrated. So it was a direct action of the union that actually ended the segregation on the ships. And also they fought homophobic attacks on seamen. So it's kind of workers' power was used by the workers collectively to transform the situation in the workplace. And I think what's happened over the last 50, 60 years that workers see unions as service organizations or insurance, and they don't see the union taking power itself in a fight against the employer, against discrimination and other issues. And that's a very important lesson that we can learn from the ILWU and other unions during the 1930s.
Can you elaborate on that a bit? Because some unions are still really strong and do fight around those issues, and others are not. You hear a lot of people say, my union's just not very strong, and it doesn't fight for working people. It doesn't fight against discrimination. So can you talk a bit more about that?
Well, one of the problems is that there was witch hunts in the United States that basically destroyed left unions in the United States. And unions are organized to defend workers. However, because of the structure of the United States and the NLRB, unions have to go through certain procedures, legal procedures, like in an election. If somebody wants to form a union, like Vandalion workers here in San Francisco are trying to organize with ILWU Local 6, and the company just fired nine activists, nine union organizers. Now, that is basically to intimidate other workers so they don't support the union, and it's union busting. But because of the going through the NLRB process, that could take years, and in the meantime, workers may be frightened and afraid to speak out. So if you accept the structure of the NLRB, then you're going to be really defeated, in my view, because it's like the Amazon workers in Bessemer, Alabama. The company was able to get in and intimidate and terrorize the workers into voting no. It's not a level playing field. So workers have to use their own power. And the reason the general strike was successful in organizing other workers is that if workers went on strike and the company tried to fire them or fire union organizers, then thousands of workers would surround a warehouse or a factory. And that gave confidence to workers that they could join unions without being terminated. I mean, there are 10,000, 12,000 workers every year who are fired simply for saying they want a union or trying to join a union. And these are the people that actually report to the NLRB. So even though we say this is a free country, in the workplace we're not free, and workers are intimidated to keeping quiet about a union. And if they do speak up about a union, they're fired.
On July 1st, we had Christine Keating on the show, who was a former lead educator at Dandelion Chocolate, where she worked for 7 years before she was laid off. And she told us her story about what happened there, and we'll definitely do a follow-up. We also talked, Steve, to Angie Matthews, who's a AAA insurance agent in Stockton, California, and they just successfully voted to organize insurance agents in Northern California, Drivers for Imperfect Foods. This is that company that delivers, veggies that might have a mark on them that aren't, quote, pretty enough for the store.
Sure.
But they box them. Those drivers voted to unionize. Tartine bakery workers recently unionized. So there's so much activity going on. And then to add to that, these are all brand new. I'm reading from SiliconValley.com. Best deal ever. New contract for Food for Less workers includes raises and bonuses. Newsweek. Hundreds of Frito-Lay workers go on strike, citing 84-hour work weeks. Washington Post, Burger King workers announced resignation with a sign outside their restaurant, "We all quit." And they did this because they didn't have access to air conditioning and they're just tired of being treated
That's right.
like that. So much is happening across the country.
Well, the pandemic has actually forced workers, in some cases a matter of life and death, to look to a union. Unfortunately, in California, under Governor Newsom, Cal OSHA, which is supposed to enforce health and safety standards, has basically been starved. There are less Cal OSHA inspectors now, industrial hygienists, than there were before the pandemic. So workers at Foster Farms, there are 13 workers died there. There are very few physical inspections of factories and workplaces, even in hospitals. The nurses have reported that there are no Cal OSHA inspectors enforcing the regulations. So under those circumstances, workers are forced to become much more politically active, and where they're unorganized, to look to a union to try to fight to defend them. And it's a real battle. But I would say that there's a strike wave taking place in the United States. And at the same time, you have the pandemic has been used by Amazon and Bezos and other companies to have a massive profit increase. So you have a oligarchy, growing oligarchy of disparity of wealth in this country, greater than any time I think in history, with Bezos worth $200 billion. I mean, this is when workers can't take care of their children, can't do what they need to do. It's creating great anger and a class hatred, and that is the other thing that took place in the 1930s and the lessons of the general strike. There was a class hatred against the system. And that period. And that's why there were general strikes. It wasn't just one union or one group of workers. It was an entire working class. And I think we're going into that period again today. In fact, there's a debate in the AFL-CIO about a general strike if Trump refused to leave office. The Vermont AFL-CIO, David Van Dusen, who's the president of it, said that there should be a general strike if he attempted a coup, an insurrection. And the president of the AFL-CIO, Richard Trumka, said that they could not take a vote on that. They went ahead, had a vote, and voted to support a general strike if there was an attempted coup. And then Trumka, the president of the AFL-CIO, instigated an investigation and then to possibly put them in trusteeship. And then what happened was he sent a letter to them saying, at this point, I won't put you in trusteeship. However, we were talking in the AFL-CIO Executive Council about a general strike, and we decided that we didn't want to mention that because then President Trump would use that as a pretext to invoke martial law in the United States. Well, these are very dangerous times when you have a rising fascist movement, and the only force, my belief, the only force that can stop that is the working class in this country. And when you talk about general strikes, of course, they're illegal under the law, but that is necessary action to protect working people, to protect democracy, in my view. And that's one of the debates we're going to be having. Actually, the Labor Fest this year is spread out to Minneapolis, where we're having panels on art that has been produced during the pandemic, and also a panel on the general strike, the history of the Minneapolis general strike, which actually took place on July 20th. We're going to have a panel on that with David Van Dusen and the president of a union local in Minneapolis. So these lessons and experiences of the American working class are important to bring home, not just from the past, but for today, what we face.
Yeah, so important. And if you want to take part in the panel discussion on the 1934 Minneapolis Teamsters strike, that is July 20th, 5 p.m. Pacific time. It is free, and you can join no matter where you are because these are on Zoom. Today, we're joined by Steve Zeltzer, a longtime labor and community activist who is on the SF Labor Fest organizing committee. It runs through the end of the month with a number of really incredible panels. There's actually a world premiere play called The Murals. It's about the conflict over the George Washington High School murals painted by WPA artist Victor Arnatoff in 1936. That's Saturday, July 18th. There's poets, there's films, as Steve said, panels on art, lots of really incredible panels and discussions. You can find the information at yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join us to talk about the current state of labor, unions, if you have any comments or questions, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Since you brought up Amazon, let's talk about pay for a minute, because workers are saying, obviously, we need a living wage, but we also want a workplace that treats us with respect and dignity, especially when you're treated like a machine at Amazon. The New York Times recently had a piece, and they report that Amazon tracks every minute of most warehouse worker shifts, from how fast they pack merchandise to how long they pause. And in this piece, they reveal that high-level execs basically say, we don't mind if there's a lot of turnover because they feel that people get, quote, lazy after 6 or so months, which is pretty wild to think about. I mean, this is such a brutal job. And then Vice just has a piece called Amazon Workers Describe Excessive Heat and Fainting in a New York City Warehouse. This is in Staten Island. Steve, these pieces keep coming out, and yet Where's the movement here? I mean, workers are quitting. They're trying to organize. We saw what happened in Alabama. And now there's going to be a bigger effort to unionize Amazon. But what does it take to actually move a massive company like Amazon after so many of these explosive exposés come out?
Well, actually, the companies have used technology, as you were saying in these reports, to further exploitation, and they want a high turnover so they don't face a regular workforce. Even in San Francisco, for example, Amazon has bought a square block on Berry and 7th Street where they want to build a warehouse, non-union warehouse. And so the Teamsters have recently voted the entire leadership pretty much that they want to organize Amazon. But in order to organize it, you have to build a mass movement. And I think that means not just the Teamsters, but other workers, and especially small businesses, because I believe what Amazon is going to do to the urban areas, Walmart did to rural areas. In other words, if Amazon comes into this warehouse in San Francisco, which actually the land was supposed to be for moderate working class housing, but if they come into San Francisco, you'll have hundreds of trucks. It's being an environmental issue, and small businesses in San Francisco will be wiped out. And that is a danger. So there has to be a broad coalition of working people and education about the environment, about the technology, about workers' rights and lives. The other thing that we should understand is that Amazon, along with other companies, Uber and Lyft, they violate the laws. Actually, the OSHA laws at Amazon are not enforced, and workers who complain about health and safety are retaliated against for making complaints, which is illegal. And OSHA hasn't enforced the health and safety regulations at Amazon because, in my view, they've been captured by the companies. When workers call about OSHA, no results. And in some cases, the case of Daryl Whitman, a federal OSHA inspector and lawyer, began to enforce some rules, and he was retaliated against in San Francisco, the OSHA inspectors here, federal OSHA inspectors. So there's a serious issue of oversight of agencies which are supposed to protect workers. And I think in the case of the 30s, what we can learn is that they weren't organized by the NLRB, the factories, General Motors, Ford. They were organized by mass action. And if thousands of workers surround these Amazon warehouses when they're trying to organize, that's the way you're going to organize them. But that requires a movement, that requires education, and uniting all workers and all unions. It can't just be one group. You have to unite the entire working class. And that was the lesson of the San Francisco general strike. It wasn't one group of workers. It was the entire working class. And also they had a general strike in Oakland, which we also can commemorate with the walk. That general strike was very powerful when trolley workers in Oakland shut down to support striking clerical workers, women clerical workers. And I think that this unity of workers is growing. And we have to learn the history of labor because they said that General Motors could never be organized at one time. Ford could never be organized. Workers were able to do that. And Amazon can be organized. Working people have the power in this country. One of the other problems is reliance on the Democrats. And although the unions support the Democrats and unions right now are supporting this PRO Act, the fact of the matter is the Democrats say that they're not going to challenge the filibuster. So that means this PRO Act is going to go no place in the Congress. So that means it's going to be left to working people on the ground in the workplaces to organize to defend themselves. And like Dandelion, where they fire nine workers, organizers, I mean, that should not be accepted by working people. If you want a union, why should you be terminated for that? It's illegal, but employers do that and get away with it all over the country.
What do you think of the Teamsters voting to organize and unionize Amazon? This was a big announcement that came out last month. The Teamsters has over 1 million members, and they voted overwhelmingly to organize hundreds of thousands of Amazon workers across the country.
I think that's a good step. But as I said, it can't just be the Teamsters. In order to be successful, you have to organize the community as well that's being affected. And we're going to have a panel, including a lawyer from Detroit, because in Detroit, Amazon they privatized the Michigan Fairgrounds and 130 acres, and they're planning to build a regional Amazon distribution center warehouse. In Oakland, for example, Amazon, through logistics, has bought warehouses, and they're going to set up a Amazon warehouse operation in the Port of Oakland. next to unionized ILWU and other workers. And the question is, delivered by Zim Ships, by the way, which has a contract with Amazon. So how are you going to organize those? You have to have a mass movement. It can't just be one to ILWU, one union. You've got to have a broad movement, Teamsters uniting with longshoremen, uniting with all workers, teachers. And the issue of privatization, and this is another issue that goes through Labor Fest, is that public resources are being privatized. The park is being privatized by these nonprofit agencies. City services are being outsourced and privatized, where people are paid 30 to 40% less for doing the same work as public workers. City College is being privatized. They privatized the Balboa Reservoir and gave it to for-profit developers when students need the land there, and it could be developed for education. So this is a serious issue of privatization of public resources, which threaten working people. I mean, protecting community college, that's a major issue. Working class kids, black, brown kids, should have a right to go to community college, and it's basically being shut down. Departments are being shut down. Even the music department at City College is threatened with being shut down. I mean, can you imagine in the wealthiest city in the world, San Francisco, they're closing down community college. You can't get classes there because they say they don't have enough money. I mean, you have a serious systemic problem that has to be addressed, and we have to defend it. Now, the other issue is the murals, because murals are under attack too, not only George Washington High, but the murals at the at UCSF, Zach Heim, murals were being threatened, and murals at the San Francisco Art Institute were being threatened. And it's amazing in the city of San Francisco, with such great murals, world-renowned artists who did murals during the 30s and 40s, they're threatened. The mural at City College, which was there in the theater, Diego Rivera Theater, has been moved to the Museum of Modern Art. However, because of privatization interests and developers, they haven't built a theater to return it. So you may have a situation in San Francisco at City College where the mural can't be returned and they have to pay $30,000 a month for storage because of the, in my view, malfeasance of the administrators and the failure to build a theater, which we, the taxpayers, have passed bonds to build for decades, actually. We've been paying money to build a theater, arts theater at City College. They still hasn't been built. And these are threats to our art, our culture, our history, which we're addressing actually in Labor Fest with Bob Cherney, who is a professor at San Francisco State, who wrote a book on Richard Arnotoff's life, Victor Arnotoff's life. And this history again is intertwined with what's going on today. And that's what makes it actually pretty exciting and very interesting.
Well, that Amazon slave labor and union busting event is taking place on July 17th at 2:00 Pacific time. It's an online panel discussion and it is free. We got an email from Sheila who says, I'm at work and my blood is boiling. I work in public health. In my opinion, the reason why Amazon and others don't care about turnover is the same reason why drug traffickers shift to human trafficking, the endless supply of labor. Well, this is interesting, Steve, because a lot of people are saying, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. I'm not going to go back to this low-wage job that exploits me. I'm going to, you know, maybe go back to school and get a better job, or at the very least stand up for myself and say, I'm not going to put up with this anymore.
I think it's exciting. I think people are waking up, and people are very angry. I mean, this is a rich country, a wealthy country, but people have been put second to profits. I mean, we should remember that Tesla was allowed to continue to operate even when there was a order to stay in place by the Department of Public Health. They ignored that, and small businesses were being shut down in the East Bay while Tesla continued to operate because Elon Musk, he's above the law, and workers there were being contaminated, infected. In fact, a lot of the workers at Tesla were then, they had to go by buses. They can't afford to live in the Inner Bay area. They go by buses to Stockton and Tracy, and they were transferring the virus. So if you have a situation in which you're locked into a job, you can't get out, that's creating a very angry working class, and that's what's happening in this country. And unions are an organization to stand up and fight for workers, and we need democratic unions that will do that and challenge it. I mean, even San Francisco General Hospital, for example, black workers were not able to get masks. They were put in front of desks in front of the hospital without proper PPE. Even at UCSF, the nurses had to reuse masks, N95 masks. I mean, this is UCSF. They were not prepared. Now, they did pass a law in California that hospitals have to be prepared with a 2-month supply. But why did that have to? There have to be a fight? It's because these institutions really run for profit and just-in-time production. And they're not interested in storing PPE, as well as the fact that PPE in the United States was outsourced for greater profits. We can't blame the Chinese for the fact that companies in the United States said we're going to outsource for greater profits. And that was encouraged, actually, by the tax laws. And that's one of the contradictions in this country. Well, Why can't we supply PPE?
This is such a good point. I've been wanting to do a show about this because NPR did a piece about that, that so many of these multinationals outsourced to China so they could take advantage of low wages and no environmental laws. And so, therefore, we don't have PPE because it's made overseas at such a low price, but they're not sending it to the United States. I mean, multinational corporations in this country made those decisions.
It's crazy. It is really crazy. But, you know, it's called capitalism. It's really called going where you make the most profit. Yeah. And that's why you have outsourcing. Outsourcing is because they can pay people less doing the same work someplace else.
Right.
And that has really exposed, again, the whole capital system in the United States. They don't have a national industrial policy. Let the free market decide. That's the ideology. And that ideology encouraged companies to go overseas, first down south to non-union south, and then to Mexico, and then to Asia. So we're in a global economy, and that's combined now with technology, the internet, and AI, where workers now are competing with workers all over the world using the internet.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because before we end the show, we definitely want to talk about international workers, because as you said, this is all so connected. Today, we're speaking with Steve Zeltzer, a longtime labor and community activist who's on the SF Labor Fest organizing committee. SF Labor Fest is an amazing event, a month long. Films, art, poetry, panels. The majority of this is free, and because of COVID, you can watch and take part in these panels from wherever you are. Find information at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we've got another special show with civil rights giants Hezekiah Watkins and Annie Pearl Avery. Hezekiah Watkins was Mississippi's youngest freedom rider. He was arrested and put on death row when he was just 13. Annie Pearl Avery was arrested many times for protesting and participating in voter registration drives across the South. We will talk about the past with them, where we are right now, and where we're going. We hope you can join us for tomorrow's show. Today, we are talking about SF Labor Fest, which runs through the end of the month. So many incredible events. You can find the schedule at yourcallradio.org or laborfest.net. Today, we're joined by Steve Zeltzer, a longtime labor and community activist who's on the SF Labor Fest organizing committee. And if you have any questions or comments about labor, unions, where we are right now, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet at yourcallradio. Let's hear from Lisa in San Francisco. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for holding.
Hi. Yes, I'm a member of UPTI, a rank and file member of the University Professional Technical Employees of California. Technical employees who work out of University of California, representing about 15,000 workers. I'm a healthcare worker, I'm a medical interpreter, and I also I'm very happy that you have this program, because I'd like for Steve, if possible, to talk about the level of international solidarity that, for example, the ILWU has always shown. And what the ILWU is facing right now here in our own backyard in Howard Terminal, where Don Fisher and the people are trying to, and his people are trying to create a stadium which would destroy the terminal when they could easily do it at the East Bay where they could easily create a stadium in the Colosseum. And also, if he could talk about I just want to let you know that I'm also a delegate of the San Francisco Labor Council on the part of my union, and we have had presented a resolution on Palestine, and the resolution is really important because it talks about the widespread and emerging support within the actual labor movement in the United States from many different unions throughout the country, like Unite Here, Local 23. From the South, representing 25,000 hospitality workers, issued a statement in solidarity with Palestine. And it's the Palestinian labor movement that's asking for support for the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. And they've been asking for this support for a long time. And one of the things is my own union also passed a resolution in support of Palestine, in support of BDS, in support of stopping aid to Israel, because also we included the role that the AFL-CIO has played in suppressing suppressing Palestine as well as
Thank you for the call. Sorry to cut you off, but we have a number of people on the line, and I just want to be sure we have time to have Steve respond.
Yeah, well, I mean, the ILWU, because of its history and of internationalism. They supported the boycott of apartheid South Africa. And in 1984, we had a program on that. And also they have supported the picket lines of the boycott of the Zim shipping line, which, by the way, has signed a contract with Amazon to bring products from China into the port of Oakland at the warehouses that they're building for Amazon. So internationally, but of course, the secondary boycott is illegal under Taft-Hartley. Which was passed really to stop workers having solidarity with other workers. So that's an issue. And I think internationalism is key. The workers in Palestine, the workers in China, the workers in every country, we need solidarity because we're fighting the same companies. I mean, one of the other things I was going to add is part of the pandemic, the good side of the pandemic is using Zoom as we are now. I am. Workers around the world can unite and tell their stories. And one of the things that we're going to be having is a panel on Namibia. China has bought the mines in Namibia, the uranium mines, and now they're filing the union leadership of the Rossing mine in Namibia. So we're going to have the miners on from Namibia talking about their struggle. Also, we're going to have a boat ride on the 31st on labor with labor historians, Gray Brecken and others talking about labor history, going out in the boat and having music and commemorating the lives of Al Rojas, a co-founder of the farm workers, Ann Feeney, a singer, a labor troubadour, Rua Grafis, who's a taxi cab driver, labor educator, and Terry Collins, who just passed away, who was the president of KPOO and an activist at San Francisco State. So, you know, the this history, this culture, the struggles of working people, and the lessons of that are important, and that's what Labor Fest is all about.
Well, these sound like amazing events. The Africa Namibian Miners and Union Busting Panel is on July 31st at 10 a.m. Pacific. That one is free. And then the Labor Maritime History Boat Tour is on July 31st at 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific. And that is $60. And it leaves, looks like Pier 41. And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. I also just quickly, Steve, I've been really wanting to do a show about this because we've done so many shows about garment workers here in California and around the globe. And garment workers, especially in places like Bangladesh, have been hit so hard by COVID. I mean, not only did their pay go down, but they're saying that the brands did not pay them at all. And I mean, their pay is already so incredibly low, and they're working for these multi-million and billion-dollar corporations.
Well, there was an action actually at the Gap of Bangladeshi garment workers because they wanted protection. They wanted to make sure the companies in Gap buys product from workers in Bangladesh and other countries. And they had a lay down in front of the Gap owned by John Fisher, the Fisher family, because these companies do profit from virtual slave labor. The conditions of garment workers are free trade zones that workers labor in are very bad health-wise, and also they prevent union organizing. Union organizers of garment workers are assassinated in many of these countries, so it's a very difficult situation. But yes, the pandemic has destroyed the lives of garment workers and other workers countries which are very poor and are dependent on the garment industry.
Well, we're definitely going to do a show about that soon. Thank you for the call. Let's go next to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hello. I haven't followed or haven't been involved in labor for a long time because I've been retired for a long time. But I wanted to ask him about a couple of things. One, I remember when the Patco strike took place and Reagan fired the air traffic controllers. I always felt that at that point, unfortunately, labor wasn't organized enough to really resist that. And I think that led to a cascade of events that we've been living with ever since. That's one thing. Secondly, I'd want to hear what he has to say about labor and the environment, how people that he's familiar with in the labor movement are looking at the environment, because obviously that's a critical issue. It's going to affect everybody, and I'm just wondering if that's something that he's got some take on. And lastly, with regard to a general strike, I don't know if you could organize that. I've felt ever since Trump took office that would have been a good idea, but especially after the January 6th debacle at the Capitol. But labor's got a big stake in what's going on right now, in the sense that if the Republicans are able to get away with all this stuff that's going on, the voting stuff in the states, and the Democrats can't hold on, although they're not huge supporters of labor, in my opinion, things are going to get so much worse, it's going to be ridiculous. So I'm wondering if it's possible even to do something at the state level, you know, rather than a national general strike.
Well, I mean, Patco was used, the breaking of Patco by Reagan was used to destroy unions all over the country. They could have, I mean, there was a debate at IAM, the machinist union, about shutting down the airports. But again, the union officials did not want to do that. That's against the law. And the fact that they did not shut down at the airports meant that Reagan was successful. And I think that's the lesson of this. If you kowtow to these laws, you will be defeated. The state represents the billionaires. Let's be clear about that in the United States. It's a fight against the state. It's not just a fight against companies. The state is representing the billionaires. That's why Bezos and these people are as wealthy as they are. The other question of climate, we are in a desperate situation for survival in this planet. And yet the oil and gas industry are still doing fracking in this country. In fact, Biden's EPA approved, continued to allow fracking in this country. The fact of the matter is that these companies operate for profit. The natural resources are, for them, only profit. And that is a question of who controls the United States. It's not the people. It's not those people who want to protect the climate. It's the corporations who are interested in making profits. So even in California, there's been fracking under Governor Brown and Governor Newsom. There's still fracking going on in California. And unfortunately, in the unions, there are some unions who are supportive of fracking because it's jobs. And they were supportive of pipelines. So we have to have a restructuring of our country. And I doubt that it's going to happen under the Democrats. That's my own personal view. Because that means taking over, for workers to take over, or public control of the land, public control of the utilities. You have in California, PG&E, which is a privately owned utility, which basically did not do what it was supposed to do, protecting the gas lines, protecting the electrical lines in Sonoma and other places. There were fires. They got charged with murder, but they were never prosecuted, the executives. Why is that? Why, when companies violate the law, they get a penalty, a financial penalty, which amounts to pennies of their wealth, and yet they're never prosecuted criminally? If a worker on a job does something illegal, they steal something, they're taken away in handcuffs. If a company executive does something, they get off with a slap on the hand, like the drug industry. This is a unequal justice, if you want, and that is because the corporations control the government, both Democrats and Republicans, in my view. And that's, I personally believe we should have a labor party in this country that will represent working people. But the climate crisis is frightening. it's not only frightening for me, but it's frightening for young people. What kind of future are our young people going to have in this country with the heat? I mean, I have friends who moved out of San Francisco because of the pandemic to Chico and other places, and now they're saying they're going to have to come back because of the weather. It's so high, 108, 110. And this is just beginning. So it's a radical situation. It requires radical change in the way things are organized. But I don't see that happening, frankly, under the Democrats and Republicans.
Hmm. Well, thank you for that call. Steve Zeltzer is a longtime labor and community activist who is on the SF Labor Fest Organizing Committee. And you can find the lineup. A number of events are happening throughout the month of July at yourcallradio.org. Now I would like to welcome Edward Escobar to the show. Edward is founder of the Alliance for Independent Workers and the Drivers Unite movement. Edward is a San Francisco-based driver who advocates and lobbies for drivers and gig workers' rights. He'll be on a panel this Sunday called AI, Algorithm, the Gig Economy, and Global Exploitation Through Platforms. It starts at 4:30 Pacific, and it's free. Hi, Edward. Welcome back to the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Edward, can you just give us an update? What are you hearing from Uber and Lyft drivers? How did they cope during the pandemic?
Not well when they're being crucified on the cross of labor. It's either work or die or stay at home and die. So they're not given many choices. And it's interesting that we've done collaborations with Steve Zeltzer and his organization in the past, and we've done protest rallies in front of Cal OSHA calling for them to have a plan of action. And we're talking early part of last year. And they just now recently, there was an article that came out that OSHA now has a plan for future pandemics. In the meantime, essential workers were suffering. Essential workers were dying. And it goes beyond just gig workers and drivers. So this is something that, what were they doing sitting on their brains this entire time? Everyone was doing Zoom conferences and they could have come up with a plan. There was plenty of time and opportunity. So it's a little too little, too late. And unfortunately, Governor Newsom fell asleep at the wheel on that. Drivers, gig workers, they're all suffering tremendously, and they're not being provided any support from these tech titans, the Ubers, the Lyft, the DoorDash, the Postmates, the Instacarts, that quite frankly, they put profits before people 24/7. Unacceptable.
Vice has a piece about Uber and Lyft drivers who say they're not going back to that job because it is so brutal. Maurice, a former driver in New York who spent 4 years working for Uber and Lyft, said, "If I kept driving, something was going to break. I already go nights without eating or sleeping. My back hurt, my joints hurt, my neck hurt. I felt like a donkey, like a slave driving all the time." And this piece is just full of comments like that. People who say, "I just didn't feel like a human being. I woke up every day asking how long could I keep up with this?" This is Yona, who worked for Lyft in California for 6 years until the pandemic. So, Edward, yeah, for people who say that they cannot go back to this backbreaking job that doesn't pay them, what are their plans?
Well, I mean, addressing what you just stated, the second leading cause of death is sedentary death syndrome, which means sitting on your backside for longer than 11 hours a day, good 2, 3, 4 months, and it reduces your lifespan, and it provokes a lot of illnesses and causes long-term damage to your lifespan. So I understand tremendously, but I also want to add that because of the pandemic and the level of desperation and these folks being out there at all hours of the day, 24/7, they have also been victimized violently. You're talking about stabbings. You're talking about shootings, robbings, robbery. It just goes on and on and on when it comes to the victimization that they're experiencing. And to top it off, there's no support. Uber, Lyft, these other tech titans, they just throw the worker under the bus. So understandably so. It's in the news constantly. And it's not just here in the U.S. Our global partners that we are aligned with in Brazil, they have drivers dying at least one a day. in the favelas, in Lagos, Nigeria. They're dying. It's amazing what's going on throughout the globe. And that's why we're addressing this in Labor Fest. And thanks to Steve Seltzer and the Labor Fest organization this year that we're going to have specific discussion about this paradigm shift that's occurring under this pandemic crisis.
In Brazil, one driver is dying a day?
Or more, yes. We have documentation and proof of it. We have our strategic leaders that are also activists that are there on the streets, and they are reporting on what's going on. Nigeria, Lagos, Nigeria as well. It's happening throughout the world. It's the new algorithmic slave master that has no soul, that does not care as to the impact on the quality of life. It's about quantity. It's about profits before people. It's about big data. It's about data mining. That's all they're concerned about. It's not about the human life.
How do you respond to this? Because drivers are down 40%. One driver told CNBC, Nicole Moore, said drivers are in a low-key strike. How do you respond to this, given the power of all of these companies, Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, Instacart, Uber-owned Postmates? You know, at a time when people really need work, and yet they cannot make ends meet with these companies, and it's really, in many cases, like we just heard, back-breaking work, and in some cases, people's lives are at risk.
Which is, all of this is by design. They try to determine what is the least amount of compensation that they can issue to a person to get someone with a pulse to do the work. And that's what they do with algorithms. That's what they do with their data analysis. And they look at their metrics and they see, how can we scale this? So it's sheer numbers. That's what they're looking at. So as far as the reduction, you've seen mostly in the area of what they call rideshare, which is ride hailing. That's the true term. And that has decreased significantly. A lot of people are fearful of using public transportation, right? On top of that, they're fearful of getting into an Uber or a Lyft. So that's what's happening right now. So the shift has gone in the direction of delivery. People that are sheltering in place still, they're receiving the delivery. So that's where the focus has gone for Uber and these other companies. And now you see a lot of this discussion about labor, but that's where we're having this discussion in Labor Fest, to take it to another level of where's the future of work headed. When you have this crisis of on a global scale that is affecting people such so that survival is their utmost concern at this point. It used to be Americans want to succeed, not just survive. Well, now it's just Americans want to survive. That's how low it's gotten.
And actually, that's one of the reasons for the rise of Trump. You've had in this country, as a result of deindustrialization, outsourcing in the industrial center of the United States, people have no future. They're angry. They're frustrated. The real income has declined for American workers for the last 20 or 30 years. And that's led to frustration, anger, which has been used by people like Trump and his people to blame immigrants, to blame blacks, to blame Chinese, to whip up xenophobia, racism, blame Asians. The attack on Asians is an organized part. By blaming China, let's blame the Asian people for what's causing this problem. When U.S. multinationals move to China for greater profits, it has nothing to do with Asians or anything. It has to do with profiteering. And I think that's really what we have to recognize, that the unity of working people here in this country, the unity of working people around the world, is necessary to defend ourselves. Working people can't defend themselves just in one country alone. We're facing multinationals are in every country of the world, And that means internationalism, which is part of Labor Fest. I mean, it's an international working class here in the United States. And we are linked up with workers, our brothers and sisters all around the world who face the same situation. I mean, in Brazil, we're going to have a cab driver, this guy Wagner, who has been fighting against the algorithms. And he was fired by Uber in Brazil because he stood up for the law, for protection, and he was terminated. And there's a struggle going on in Brazil of Uber drivers again for their health and safety, for their lives, really. They are being shot. They're being killed. And Uber knows about it right here in San Francisco, but it's profiteering in Brazil. That's what it's all about.
Mm. It's socioeconomic injustice is at the core here, and that's happening globally. And they're doing this because they can and they get away with it. And they're exploiting, specifically targeting immigrants, low-income minorities, seniors, disabled, veterans, even those that have a prior prison record. They're exploiting them. They're dividing and conquering these folks because they know they're desperate. So that's who they go for. That's who they target when it comes to recruitment. They target desperation.
Edward, we have just about 30 seconds left. We started the show by talking about all of the actions happening. So many workplaces are unionizing. In fact, we just got an email from Alicia who says, as a professional, for the first time in my life, I joined a union. What a difference. I am enjoying a new level of respect from my supervisors and the security of knowing that someone has my back. Alicia writes, I think everyone should be unionized. So there's so many union efforts going on around the country. Workers are walking off the job. Frito-Lay workers are on strike. What are your thoughts about this, what we're seeing across the country and where this is going?
Well, we practice a concept called solidarity unionism, which does not require the infrastructure of a bureaucratic a corporate element like the bureaucratic unions that you're speaking of. The whole idea is to move together to prevent the further exploitation of the workers, and that is in solidarity, be it bureaucratic unionism, solidarity unionism. Basically, we have to all come together, and there is no tomorrow. Now is the time to take action.
Edward Escobar is founder of the Alliance for Independent Workers and the Drivers Unite movement. Steve Zeltzer is on the SF Labor Fest organizing committee. Find more information about all of the incredible events throughout the month at yourcallradio.org or laborfest.net. Edward and Steve, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for covering this.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.